Hello, and welcome to a brand new story on the Cory Doctorow podcast. This is the first installment of Visit the Sins, a short story that was originally published in Asimov Science Fiction magazine in June 1999, and then reprinted in the Year's Best Science Fiction, that's David Hartwell's Year's Best Science Fiction 5, in 2000. It's a story about attention deficit disorder and generation gaps and the way that our cognitive deficits affect our families. There's a little bit of personal history in it, in that it was written at a time when my grandfather was in an old folks' home and struggling with dementia, and so there's a little bit of that in here too. I wrote this story at the University of Washington in Bellingham at a workshop run by a bunch of ex-Clarion students, people who were my classmates at Clarion. We all used to get together and write in the summers, still do that every year, although I've missed it for the last couple of years because of my travel. And it's been a very productive way of writing. Certainly I did a lot of writing of stories that you'd recognize at those workshops, and they were some of the best writing times I've ever had. And it was a great trip. I'm sitting here in my office here at home waiting for the packers and the movers to show up, or rather the movers to show up, having just done all the packing. Most of my apartment's going into storage today and tomorrow, and then the rest of it's going in a week or two, and then off I go to Los Angeles to live and write and teach at the University of Southern California for a year. If I haven't gotten back to you lately, that's why. There's a lot of stuff going on between now and then, of course. I'm going to be in Rio for the iSummit. That's the Creative Commons International Conference. If you're there, I'd love to see you and say hello to you. I'm really looking forward to seeing the whole tribe gathered there, particularly people from the international side of Creative Commons all over the world. The other big news is that the Hugo ballots are online. These are the ballots for the Hugo Award. It's the most prestigious fan award or popular award in the field of science fiction. And it's given out by people who are attending or supporting the World Science Fiction Convention, which is in Los Angeles this year. Very convenient for me, since I'm moving to LA. If you're a supporting member or an active member of the Worldcon in LA, you can vote too. You just need to send an email off to the Hugo people to get your pin if you haven't already gotten in the mail, and you can vote online. Most people who go to the Worldcon don't vote, which is a pity, because obviously these awards are better when they have more participation. And this year there's way more resource available to prospective voters than ever was before. You know, a lot of the stories are online. I'm proud to say that my story, iRobot, which was originally published online, in which the podcast can be heard on in this feed, iRobot was published online, and you can still download it online and share it around under a Creative Commons license, and there's Palm versions and other versions floating around. But there's also podcasts of all of the short stories on the ballot, or I think four of the five, and maybe the fifth is coming soon, available through Escape Pod. The novels that are on the ballot, I think four of the five of those are available as free electronic downloads to voters. And there's an amazing compendium of all of the reviews of all of the works on the ballot. So every time anyone on the internet has reviewed any of the stories or movies or artists on the ballot, that's all been collected by one guy on his live journal, and so he's linked to all of them, so you can read reviews to your heart's content of all of this stuff if you're trying to get up to speed on it now. And I've linked all that stuff in a recent post on craphound.com, so if you hit there, or on Boing Boing, you'll see it. So I'm going to start the story now, and I think it'll probably come out in two installments. It's a little shorter than most of the stories, about 7,700 words. So I think I'll nail it up in about two installments. So until we meet again, here's me hoping that you enjoy the story. Bye! Visit the Sins by Cory Doctorow. Originally published in Asimov Science Fiction magazine, June 1999. Reprinted in the Year's Best Science Fiction 5, 2000. Harper Prism, David Hartwell, editor. Sean had a way of getting his way, a way of delivering argument that implied that everyone in earshot was savvy and bold, and that the diatribe du jour was directed at the enemies of art ranged without. His thesis advisor bought it every time. Sean turned in his due diligence, a bunch of theses written in the last century, collected memoirs of survivors of electroshock, lobotomies, thalidomide. His advisor signed off, and within 24 hours he was debarking in Orlando and renting a car to take him to the home. He didn't tell his father. He'd have to eventually, before he could finish the thesis, but for now it was just him and Grandpa, head to head. Grandpa was switched off when Sean found him on the ward, which throbbed with a coleslaw of laser light and video games and fuck pics and explosions and car wrecks and fractals and atrocities. Sean remembered visits before the old man was committed, he and his dutiful father visiting the impeccable apartment in the Slate House in Kingston, Ontario. Grandpa made tea in conversation, both perfectly executed and without soul. It drove Sean's father bugfuck, and he'd inevitably have a displaced tantrum at Sean in the car on the way home. The first time Grandpa had switched on in Sean's presence, it was when Sean was trying out a prototype of the enemies of art against his father's own, as all right-thinking people know. It had scared Sean stupid. Grandpa had been in maintenance mode, running through a series of isometric stretching exercises in one corner while Sean and his father had it out. Then suddenly, Grandpa was between them, arguing both sides with machine-gun passion and lucidity, running an intellect so furious it appeared to be steam-driven. Sean's tongue died in his mouth. He was made wordless by this vibrant, violent intellect that hid inside Grandpa. Grandpa and his father had traded extemporaneous barbs until Grandpa abruptly switched back off during one of Sean's father's rebuttals, conceding the point in an unconvincing, mechanical tone. Sean's father stalked out of the house and roared out of the driveway then, moving with such speed that if Sean hadn't been right on his heels, he wouldn't have been able to get in the car before his father took off. And now here was Grandpa, in maintenance mode. He was sitting at a table, flexing his muscles one at a time from top to bottom. It was an anti-pressure sore routine. Sean guessed that it was aftermarket, something the home made available for low-functioning patients like Grandpa. Sean sat down opposite him. Grandpa smiled and nodded politely. Sean swallowed his gorge. The ones who'd had the surgery had been scattered, unable to focus. Then they had the operation, and suddenly it wasn't a problem anymore. Whenever their attention dropped below a certain threshold, they just switched off until the world regained some excitement. It had been a miracle until the kids stopped making the effort to keep their attention above the threshold and started to slip away into oblivion. "Hello, Grandpa," Sean said. Grandpa stared at him from dark eyes set in deep, wrinkled nests. Behind them, Sean could almost see the subroutines churning. "Sean," Grandpa said. Woodenly, he stood and came around the table and gave Sean a precise hug and cheek kiss. Sean didn't bother returning either. He put the recorder on the table between them and switched it on. Grandpa was a moderately wealthy man. He'd achieved much of that wealth prior to his retirement, working as a machinist on really delicate, tricky stuff. The family assumed that he did this work switched off, letting the subroutines run the stultifying repetitions, but in his preliminary research, Sean had talked to one of Grandpa's co-workers, who said that Grandpa had stayed switched on more often than not. Grandpa had acquired the rest of the wealth shortly before Sean's father had sent him south to the home. The years-old class-action suit brought by the guilty, horrified families of accidental zombies had finally ended with a settlement, and all the survivors had become instant millionaires in trust, for all the good it did them. "How are you?" Grandpa asked, placidly. "I'm working on my thesis, Grandpa. I'm here to interview you. I'll be around for the next couple weeks." "That's nice," Grandpa said. "How is your father?" "He's fine. I didn't tell him I was coming down, though. You're a touchy subject for him." Grandpa settled back into his chair. Sean was distantly aware of other survivors on the ward, gabbling and twitching at video games and smoking all at once. They were high-functioning. They could be switched on with simple stim. Grandpa only switched on for important occasions. Sean said, "Dad wishes you'd die." That did it. It was easy to tell when Grandpa was switched on. The rhythmic, methodical maintenance twitching was replaced by a restless, all-over fidget, and his eyes darted around the room. "Is he in some kind of financial trouble? He doesn't need to wait for a bequest. I'll write to the trustees right now." Sean restrained himself from saying hello again, now that Grandpa was switched on. He kept himself focused on the task of keeping Grandpa switched on. "He wishes you'd die because he hates you, and he hates himself for it. When you die, he can stop hating you and start mourning you. He knows it wasn't your fault. That's why I'm here. I want to collect your stories and make some sense out of them before you die." Sean took a deep breath. "Will you stay switched on?" Grandpa looked uncomfortable. "Your grandmother used to ask me that. I promise her I'd do it every time, but then... It's not voluntary, Sean. It's reflex. It's a learned reflex, Grandpa. It's not breathing. You didn't ask to have the surgery, but you learned the reflex all on your own. You allow your attention to drop below the threshold. You allow the chip to switch you off. Some people do it less. He jerked his head at the other old men and women, playing their Twitch games and shouting arguments at each other. Some don't do it at all. Bullshit, Grandpa said, leaning forward and planting his hands on his knees, aggro type A body language that Sean often found himself assuming. Urban legend, kid. Everyone learned it. Once you had the surgery, you couldn't help it. You know what I'm talking about, or you wouldn't be here. Your father, too. If he was ever honest enough to admit it. You both got it as bad as me, but no one ever tried to cure you. I don't have it, Sean said. I just got off a 3-hour plane ride, and I was able to just look out the window the whole way. It didn't bother me. That's not coping mechanism, either. I never even wanted to watch the seatback vid or chat up my neighbor. It wasn't true, actually. He had fidgeted like crazy, splitting the screen and screen on the seat back into 16 quads and watching as many stations as he could. He tried to assemble his thoughts on his recorder, but he'd been too wound up. Eventually, somewhere over Georgia, he'd surrendered to the screen and to counting powers of two. Grandpa pierced him with his stare. If your ego demands that you believe it, then go ahead and believe it. Sean restrained himself from squirming. He focused himself on directing the discussion. What do you like best about the home? Grandpa considered the question for so long that Sean was afraid he'd switched off. No one makes me feel guilty for switching off. No one tells me I'm weak. Except your father, of course. Dad's been here, Sean said, shocked. When? Your father visits every month. He shouts at me until I switch on. Then he leaves. He does it because the doctor told him if I didn't switch on more often, they'd move me to the zero-function ward. Sounds fine to me, and I tell him so, but he's never thought much of his brain-damaged old man. Where do you go when you're switched off? Sean asked. It was a question that was supposed to come later in the interview, maybe on day two, but he was rattled. I don't know. Away. Is it like sleep? Sean said, forgetting the rule that you never ask the subject a simple yes-no question. His heart thudded in his chest like he was giving the first interview of his life. No. How is it different from sleep? Sean asked. I usually switch on for sleep. My subconscious is pretty good at entertaining me, actually. When I switch off, I just go away. I remember it later, like it was a book that got read directly into my brain, but I'm not there. It's fucking great. You'd love it, Sean. You should get the surgery. I hear there's a lot of black market clinics where you can get it done. Southeast Asia. The sex trade, you know. Sean struggled to keep the discussion on track. Grandpa was often hostile when he was switched on, and his father always rose to the bait. Sean wasn't going to. How do you know that you're not there? Maybe you're there the whole time, bored, stupid, screaming in frustration, and you forget it all as soon as you switch on. Grandpa raised an eyebrow at him. Well, of course I am, but that's not the me that's important. I'm the one that counts, and I get to fast forward past all the slow parts. Which this is turning into, I'm afraid. Grandpa's eyes stopped seeking out the ward's corners, and he slipped into maintenance mode. The noise and lights of the ward closed in around Sean. He scooped up his recorder. Thanks, Grandpa, he said woodenly. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye, Sean, Grandpa said, and came around the table for another hug and kiss. Sean checked into the first motel he found, the Lamplighter Inn, on a dreary strip populated by disused water parks with crumbling plazas. He lay down on the bed, fed a quarter into the magic fingers, and played back the recording. It was junk. The noise of the ward masked 9 words in 10, and what words made it through were empty, devoid of any kind of emotional freight. He tried to transcribe it longhand, filling in the blanks from memory, but he couldn't keep his mind on it. He took off his sweaty, wrinkled t-shirt and slacks, dumped out his suitcase on the chipped, cigarette-burned table, and found his bathing suit. There was one other guest by the pool, an old, old woman in a one-piece with a skirt, wearing a sun hat tilted to shade her from the last of the pounding Florida sun. Sean gave her a perfunctory nod and jumped in. The water was piss-warm, thickly chlorinated. It felt like swimming in pungent sweat. Sean managed one lap and then crawled out and sat in a sway-back deck chair. "I wouldn't go swimming in that if I were you," the old woman said, in a husky, nicotine-stained voice. She clattered a grin at him through her dentures. She was the color and texture of rawhide, not so much tanned as baked. "Now you tell me," Sean said, squinting at her under his hand. "Old Ross doesn't like dealing with the pool, so he just keeps shoveling in the chlorine. Don't be surprised if you're blonde in the morning. My name's Adele. You here for long?"
"A couple weeks at least," Sean said.
Adele smiled and nodded. "That's good. That's fine. A good stretch of time to see the parks. Don't miss Universal either. I think it's better than Disney. Most people don't bother with it, but for my money, it's better."
"I don't think I'll get a chance to visit either," Sean said. "I got a lot of work to do down here."
He waited for her to ask him what kind of work, and mentally rehearsed the high-concept speech that he'd given 1,000 times while working on his thesis proposal.
"What a shame," she said. "Where did you come from?"
"Toronto," he said.
"Lord, not another snowbird," she said, good-naturedly. "Seems like half of Canada's down here. They come to get away from the winter, and then they complain about the heat. What do they expect? That's what I want to know. Was your flight good?"
"It was fine," Sean said, bemusedly. "A little dull, but fine."
"So, you're here for a few weeks," Adele said.
"Yes, working."
"Nice work if you can get it," she said, and clattered her dentures again.
"I moved here, 5 years ago, to be near my boy, in the hospital. I used to work, but I'm retired. Used to work at a dairy, answering the phones. You tell people you used to work in a dairy, they think you are milking the cows. Old Ross, he gives me the annual rate for my room. It's better than living in one of those gated places. Lord, how much shuffleboard can a body stand?"
"Your son is sick?" Sean said.
"Not sick, no," Adele said. "You wouldn't believe the roaches you get down here. Old Ross fumigates regular, but Florida roaches don't seem to care. I've lived in New York, and I've seen some pretty big roaches in my day, but not like these. Like cats! My boy, Ethan, he'd clean and clean our apartment in New York, quiet as you please. A good boy. Then he'd see a roach, and whim-wham, he'd be talking, joking, skipping, and running. Old Ross says there's nothing he can do. He says, 'Adele, this is Florida, and the roaches were here long before us, and they'll be here long after, and nothing we do is going to keep them away.' That's all fine and good, but let me tell you, I have never seen a roach in the home when I was visiting Ethan. They know how to keep them out. Maybe it's all the shouting. Lord, but they do shout."
A small light bulb blinked on in Sean's mind.
"Is Ethan very high-functioning?" he asked, carefully.
Adele glanced sidelong at him and said,
"The doctor says no, but I think he is. He's always walking around when I'm there, doing push-ups and sit-ups. He's not a young man, Ethan. 60 this year. When his father was that age, he couldn't do any push-ups, no sir. But the doctor, he says that Ethan's at zero function. Doctors, what do they know?"
"How old was Ethan when he had the surgery?" Sean asked.
"Just 7, Adele said, without changing her light tone. But Sean saw knives of guilt in her eyes. "He was going to be held back in the first grade or sent to a special school. They sent a doctor around to explain it. Ethan was smart as a whip, everyone knew that, but he just couldn't concentrate. It made him miserable, and he'd pitch these hissy fits all the time. It didn't matter where he was, the classroom, home, out in the street, in church. He'd scream and shout and kick and bite. You've never seen anything like it. The doctors, they told us that he'd just keep on getting worse unless someone did something about it. It seemed like a miracle. In my day, they just drug you up."
Sean knew the names of the old drugs. Ritalin, Siler, Dexedrine, anything that would keep you still and numb. Then came the surgery.
Adele brightened. "You really should at least try to visit Universal for an afternoon, you know. It's lovely."
"They're going to move my grandfather to the zero-function ward, I think. If he doesn't spend more time switched on, they will," Sean said. "I want to get his story before they do it. And if not his story, the reasons. Reasons for who Sean was. Reasons for who his father was."
"What a nice grandson you are. You know, it seems like no one cares about their grandparents anymore. Old Ross's grandchildren haven't visited once in the 5 years I've been here."